the blues. Didn't know which way to go. Didn't know day from night or your left from right. Boy, you really had the blues. Have you ever sat and cried and didn't know the reason why? Have you ever been alone and watched your telephone? Boy, you really had the blues. I don't know what love is, but this is one thing I know. Somebody's got to help me. These blues have got to go. I got the blues. Boy, I'm feeling mighty sad. Oh, well, this looks like the end, my friend. Oh, I really got the blues.
One of the most requested songs on my show and has become one of my favorite Lloyd Price songs is Have You Ever Had the Blues?
Isn't that amazing?
That
song
just kicks, just from the opening. Bum, ba, ba, bum, bum, bum. Bum, ba, ba. You know what I mean? That just kicks. It just really does.
Well, you know what? There was a left-hand guitarist played with a guy called Gator Tail. Willis Jackson, Ruth Brown's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Jennings.
Yeah.
It's a left-hand guitarist. First one I'd ever seen. He came to me one day and said, Lord, I got an idea about a song. Have you ever had the blues? You know, people always ask you, have you ever had the blues? So he and I sat down and we kind of put our heads together and came up with, have you ever had the blues? And he, bing, gang, 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 didn't know which way to go. Gang, 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 have you ever sat alone and watched your telephone? Oh, you really had the blues.
And the that's horns are in there too. Do you still play that song?
Yes. You know what? It's not as requested now because it wasn't a bigger song. It was more of an R&B song.
It was a B-side, yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably why I like it so much because it's such an R&B song. Yeah.
Well, our demographics now is a little different.
Yeah.
So we got to kind of stick with those, you're too young,
the
I'm going to get
ones.
Married. Yeah. But that's a wonderful song.
Well, you just mentioned going to get married. So, Johnny, you're so young. Yes. I like that how the white choir says is trying to give you advice, but you're so young, and you're like, I'm going to get married.
That's another song. I was down at the University of Virginia, and we was out playing basketball, and I was watching all these kids graduate. So what comes after graduation is marriage. So everybody playing basketball, I'm trying to think of how can I make this work. Graduation and school. Mm. And I remember Johnny Guitar, that cowboy movie.
Oh, okay.
And I just said, well, I'll take that and just say, you're too young. Johnny, you're too young to get married. These was all popular events, like Three Little Pigs in one of my records. I tried to get hooks that was familiar, that people had hummed and known most of their lives.
Right.
And I'd just taken right songs around.
Lord, I think you just nailed the secret of a hit record right there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at you. You take something that people know. You put a beat behind it. It's like they already knew the song.
Absolutely.
They're humming it.
From Lord of Miss Claudia on. Familiarity. You know, that's the whole hook, is to make things that people are familiar with and what they know. I think it was either Bach or somebody said, if you can't do the introduction twice, don't put it in the song.
There you go.
Johnny, 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 Johnny.
Did you ever work with Louis Jordan?
Louis Jordan was my all-time hero. I got the chance to work with Louis, I think, just before he passed. I think it was in 1960. We was in Philadelphia. What a musician. What an entertainer. I mean, I can still see this man now today. People who didn't hear Louis Jordan, try to find some of his films now and see and watch this musician. What a technician this man was.
Absolutely.
So he is Mr. Rock and Roll as far as I'm concerned. Louis Jordan, Caledonia.
He was doing it 10, 15 years before rock and
absolutely.
Roll.
Absolutely. Early in the morning, they can't get right. I mean, just
beans and cornbread.
What
call and response. That is just a fantastic one.
Oh, what a
What's the use of getting sober when you're only going to get drunk again?
You're only going to get drunk again. Hey, everybody, let's have some fun.
That's right.
Pappy?
You only live but once, and when you're dead, you're done.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Ray Charles paid great homage to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wynonie Harris is one of my all-time favorites. Now, I know Wynonie, he lived hard, he worked hard, he fast women, hard-drinking, hard-driving guy. Did you ever meet him, or do you have any stories about Wynonie, Mr. Blues Harris?
I did meet Wynonie. I met Wynonie several times. Now, stories, I don't have no real good stories, but what you just said is what I always heard about Wynonie.
He died of an ulcer, didn't he? He had bad ulcer pains towards the end of his life.
My understanding was he drank the fifth of Seagram 7 in the day, and I guess that will burn you out. But Wynonie was...
Was he a nice guy?
Yes, to me he was. I met him a few times at a club in New York called the Baby Grand.
So you met him after you were big?
Yeah. I didn't meet him doing... No, I never met him.
So his career was pretty much done, and your star was...
He was right at the end of it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Was he... It's the thing that gets me about doing the research and listening to the music and really, really, you know, following these guys now that they're long gone is that I get the feeling that they weren't appreciated during the time. Like, I'm sure Wynonie... I mean, if I could have met Wynonie, you know, I would have been a real treat, but... I just imagine that he probably didn't get the accolades that he deserved for his music.
Well, I think you're right, Matt. I don't think you can go back, but it's hard to even describe the times back during that time. It was this was a different place. Before you were born, this was a very difficult place. The music was played like from sunup to sundown. Sometime you only got the music between 10 and 4 o'clock in the afternoons. So most people was working at that time, so you couldn't get but so much credit. The dance halls usually was little nightclubs where you get 125, 200 people in, you got a packed house. So he didn't get the accolades and he didn't get the spread. Most of the acts back during that time didn't get what they deserved. You couldn't bring any white people. The only people you brought was people of color. And most of them couldn't integrate and stuff like that. So he didn't get the spread. There was no justice back during that time. But I look at this as pioneers. Pioneers got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And look where we are today. You know what I mean?
That's true.
During that time, when I recorded Lord and Miss Claudia, the entire music industry was only worth about $300 million a year. Now,
billions.
Michael Jackson signs for that. I mean.
That's true. When you were on Alan Freed's package tours back in the day, did you encounter segregation when you were going through the South?
Not so much with Alan, because I never worked the South with Alan. I worked with Dick Clark in the South. We did. When Johnny with the Crest,
16, Johnny Maestro.
Johnny Maestro with 16 Candles. I never forget, we was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and when they found out that Johnny was a white boy, the police wouldn't let him sing with the group. That was one. And in St. Louis had two sides to the stage, a back and a front. Same in Memphis. In auditoriums, you sang on one side to the white, the other side to the black.
So you're saying if you were a white performer, you'd come out on like the left side of the stage and you'd be singing to the white people who are sitting there?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Okay. I'm saying they would not let the black and white performers entertain at all. Not at all. But if white people came to see the show, they sat on the white side and the black sat on the black side. So you had to go back and forth across the stage and try and sing. Those who had that kind of facility. The ones who didn't have the facility, they didn't get in. You did a white night and a black night. So it started to get better and better as time went on. And it didn't really get good until maybe the mid-70s.
Really? That long?
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough here for a long time. Yeah. Well, in 1964 is when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill. Now, that's a license, like a driver's license. It ain't great now, but it's a lot better than it was. Man. You would not be able to tell the difference. Those of us who have lived long enough to see the difference can tell the difference. But if you was not here when these things were going on, you'd think that this has been the same way forever, but it hasn't. It hasn't been this way at all. as recently, well, John F. Kennedy, I mean, and when he got assassinated, I played the University of Maryland that same night when he got shot. I had to work the University of Maryland, and it was segregated that night. Yes, in Maryland. Wow. Yeah.
So, that's something.
So America has came a very, very long way. But when I've had the pleasure and opportunity to travel all over the world, this is still the greatest country on earth. This is a God-blessed nation. Even with the problems and things that we've had, we're about living these, but most people are not. It's still very bad, very, very, very bad in most parts of the world. Iraq, for example. I mean, I'm not a political person, but all you got to do is sit on the television.
That's true.
But in terms of music, music is the same everywhere. Well, I could play my music in Japan and India and Africa, Germany. Everybody knows the lyrics. Everybody knows the song, and everybody's happy. I think people should talk music when even at the what they call peace conferences. Bring Bo Diddley in and bring
it. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
And let Fats Domino, and then maybe they'll have a better relationship. You know what I mean?
What is the price of happiness? Question. How can I find me love? Question. Where could I sell my heartache? And what do I pay for love? Question. Where could I get me a good night's sleep? Question. To trade off my trouble and pain? Question. How long does it take to realize that love is a priceless thing? Oh, you can't buy love if you're rich with diamond and gold. But heartaches will come around freely and knock on anybody's door. What is the price of happiness? How can I find me love? Where could I sell my heartaches? And what do I pay for love? You can't buy love if you're rich with diamond and gold. But heartaches will come around freely and knock on everybody's door. With diamond and gold, but heartaches will come around freely and knock on anybody's door. What is the price of happiness? How can I find me love? Where could I sell my heartache? And what do I pay for love? What do I pay for love? What do I pay for love?
Well, that brings us to your third record label, Turntable.
Yes.
And your club with the same name, Turntable.
Right.
And how did that come about?
Well, that was the mid-60s. I had done just about everything you can do. I thought in music business. I had been all over. I had played everywhere. I'd done so many one-nighters. I was kind of like getting tired. And the turntable was Morris Levy's Birdland, the jazz corner of the world, right at 52nd Street and Broadway. I heard that that place was going to close. Now, ironically, I probably was the only rhythm and blues or whatever you wanted to call me at that time, rock and roll act, ever worked Birdland because I had a big band.
Oh, okay.
Slide Hampton was my music conductor. Grover Washington was in the band, Gil Askey, Earl Van Dyke. Mm. All the great musicians was in my band. When I was down there, Oscar Goodstein, who at that time was the manager of Birdland, told me Morris Levy was going to close that place. And they said, whoa, you know, this would be a good spot for my band. I can house my band here and work whenever I feel like it. Plus, I'm on Broadway. That's how that came about. I started to pursue that immediately and wound up with the lease for 20 years right at 52nd and Broadway, right across the street from the Ed Sullivan Theater, and renamed it to Turntable, tore everything down, made it the most modern nightclub in the history of New York. Had a recording studio in there. I had rebuilt the stage, biggest stage in New York for a nightclub, bigger than the Copa. Had lights. It was all hydraulics. It was an amazing thing.
Wow.
Sights. It was sound and lights. Just gorgeous.
How long was the club open for?
4 years. What happened was Larry Spangler, who had the Merv Griffin, she was the producer of Merv Griffin television show at that time. He came down and he caught my show and he thought that my club and myself would be an excellent television specimen, the first black artist on television.
Okay.
Could you imagine that?
Yeah.
And it was going to do it live from the turntable.
Oh.
Why the turntable is not there today? We was going to build turntables in all the southern major cities and Midwest. It was just a marvelous idea for franchising these clubs and the whole bit. I don't know what happened, but the day that I had the press conference of the television show, my picture was going to be in 1,700 Associated Papers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That night, you couldn't get in for the press conference. We just knew it was going to be a success. The next morning, the very next morning, Matt, they found my partner, Logan, with two bullets in his head. Never got off the ground, and I closed the turntable and moved to Africa. It was unbelievable what happened. It was going to be a tremendous thing. It was, I guess, during that integration period. It was during that time when things was real bad in this country. And they saw the turntable as being one of those monsters that will integrate. There was no policy. People was just people. And they saw me as being a television star, which was going to increase. Still don't know who killed Logan. But that shot the turntable in the foot, shot the turntable, shot me in the foot. And actually, my music career, because I moved to Africa. I start hearing phone calls that there's a bullet waiting for me, all that crazy stuff. And that's what happened to the turntable.
That's something.
Isn't that amazing?
How long were you in Africa for? What part did you move to?
I was all over Africa, wound up in Nigeria, and a little Victoria Island there in Lagos, and kind of liked it down there. You know, I really did. One, I guess, was out of trying to stay alive. Because, the reality of killing people, I had to identify Logan in his office, and our office right on top of the club. So I said, this is real. And at that time, there was knocking people off left and right. And I didn't know where it came from or why. We were musicians.
Somebody thought you were a troublemaker somewhere.
They probably did. And in my background about being drafted in the Army and my music causing ruckus, and now I'm going to Broadway, somebody didn't like it. And they figured Logan was the brains of my operation. So let's get rid of the head, and whatever we do that, the rest will follow. So that's what happened to the turntable.
That's a shame, man. I'm sorry to hear that. How long were you in Africa for? When did you come back?
I was in Africa from the mid, say from 68 until about 83.
Wow.
Yeah. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was a wonderful thing. I learned more about doing business. I opened a little business over there. I was an import-export guy doing stuff. And it got me to understand my craft a little better.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back, I went into the building business in the city of New York for the state. I built affordable housing around New York and Staten Island, the Bronx, I mean, and managed my publishing company up until a few years ago. And it's just been wonderful. I started to understand stuff a little better. And now I'm back doing what I love, and that's music.
Thanks for coming in. I
just want to thank you, Matt. It's wonderful.